We talk about when we pick things up. I'm looking for something now to pick up. I'll find something. What have I got? No, I haven't got anything appropriate. I'm trying to find a pen. There's nothing here. But when we pick things up and we fiddle with them.
Hello and welcome to this podcast on Brave Conversations. Today, TED Learning's Justin Smith Essex is joined by Catherine Mount, who is an expert in both brave conversations and communication skills.
So, Catherine, welcome to today's podcast, where we're talking about the challenge of having brave conversations. Let's start by, what do we mean by a brave conversation?
It's a pretty broad term, actually, isn't it? And this is, funnily enough, how I start every training session when we have a brave conversations training session, is to ask people, you know, what are you doing in the room? What do you consider to be a brave conversation in your workplace? What kind of things are you encountering? And we get all sorts of answers about that. Things like performance conversations, when somebody has to give some feedback about somebody else's performance. Sometimes personal issues can feel like you have to have a deal of courage to tackle something that's very personal to somebody else. We also have things like salary conversations, all sorts, you know, things that require us to build up an amount of courage to have that conversation. And usually things that we feel are going to get a reaction from the other person, an emotional reaction usually, and potentially a defensive reaction from somebody else. Bad news conversations, things like that as well. Anything at all that can be bad news or possibly even upset somebody else. You know, that's what we need to get courage in order to do.
So you've started to touch on there as to some of the things that people might experience from the other party when they're having that brave conversation. What sort of challenges do you think people have in starting to have a brave conversation? Why do you do the type of training that you do?
When we are having to get up the courage to do that, a lot of the time we feel a range of emotions before we have those conversations in the first place. So the kind of things that people are talking about is feeling nervous, feeling anxious, sometimes even frustrated. You know, if we're talking about a performance-related conversation where somebody has perhaps been, their performance hasn't been great in a particular area, could have been over a long period of time, maybe you've had to have quite a lot of these conversations with somebody, then it can get frustrating. So often when we're talking about these conversations, it's about how the other person's going to react that can make us feel as though it's a challenge in the first place. But actually, because of that, we start to feel something about it, whether that's nerves or anxiety, frustration, any of those things that could be involved in it. So the challenges involved in that, if we're feeling something before we go into that conversation, then that can colour the way that we have the conversation. We talk about what happens when we have the amygdala hijack, for example. That's something that comes into our conversations where our emotions can overtake our rational thought. So we sometimes feel, and I ask people this question and it always gets an affirmative, do you ever find yourself in a situation where you just can't think straight? You know, we can't think of the right words to say. And that's usually because we've had an emotional reaction to either the subject matter in the first place or to the way that the other person is behaving because they've just received some bad news. And then our emotions take over and we can't quite work out how to handle that situation in the moment because our rational thought has kind of gone AWOL. So that challenge, but also making sure that we don't exacerbate a situation. So if we have to go in and give somebody a piece of bad news, let's say it's a bit of salary information, they're not going to get the rise they were expecting or something along those lines, we know up front that they're not going to be receiving that gratefully. We know that it's not, yeah, you know, from their perspective, it might be a bit of negative news. So we know that's going to happen and we can't always make it turn it into a positive. There's no point in trying because it is a piece of bad news and we can't take that away. We may feel as well as though there's a possibility we could make it worse. You know, there's something that we can do to perhaps to get the best outcome for people. And there is a whole load of space down there where it could be worse than that. You know, we could potentially say something that would exacerbate it, make it worse for that person. So we can feel a lot of nerves around that that is a challenge for us, to make sure that we get the best out of it that we possibly can.
And so with that in mind, people will obviously sometimes want to avoid having a brave conversation. What are the risks of doing that, by just thinking, I won't tackle that situation then, because I'm so concerned about the reaction of the other person, you know, having to tell them that they're not getting the pay rise that I want, which might not be the best example, because obviously that's something that has to be communicated. But I know, you know, in years of training, that one of the worst brave conversations that people fear is having to tell someone they've got a personal hygiene issue. And so they avoid doing it. What are the risks by not having that brave conversation?
You're absolutely right. People do. We do avoid. Well, it's human nature to avoid, isn't it? Because we feel that there may be some kind of confrontation. But also, something like that, there is nobody relishes the necessity to say something that we know is going to upset somebody else. You know, no one's going to enjoy that. So it's really natural for us to want to avoid it. And depending on that message, of course, there are lots of different risks, but things are likely to escalate in whatever way it may. Let's take that as an example. So it's a personal hygiene issue. Usually we get to that point because maybe a few people have mentioned it to us. So other people in that situation are finding it uncomfortable, which is why it's something that we need to tackle. And if we don't tackle it in a timely manner, then that's going to get worse for those people. And as a manager, if it's our responsibility to do that, then that's not doing us any favours or instilling any trust in the rest of the team. Also, of course, by the time we get to that point, we'll have built a lot of anxiety in ourselves. The more we avoid, the more that anxiety grows, the bigger that issue becomes for us. So that when we do eventually tackle it, there could be all sorts of things that are leaking out of us in that room that will make that conversation more difficult than it would have been if we'd had it earlier on.
And are there good times and bad times, or good ways or bad ways to have a brave conversation? So thinking about the environment and maybe kind of timing of doing that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, a lot of the things that we talk about are, you know, what is the right medium to do that in? Because, of course, we have so many more conversations now that are remote with each other. We do a lot of it online. Yeah. If we're talking about a difficult conversation that is going to require us to get enough courage to have it, so a brave conversation, then, as we've said already, it's likely to have an impact on the other person and not necessarily a positive impact. So we talk a lot about how we deliver information. So how does that come across in our communication? It comes across through our body language, our tone of voice. There's so much in our interpersonal skills that are so important, even more important when we're having a conversation like this than they would normally be, because it's a heightened situation. So the other person is going to be reading a lot into what we're saying physically to them, as well as the words that we're using. So finding the correct medium to do that, or the right medium, or the best medium to do that in, is really important. And usually I would say the best medium is face to face. So if you are able to have that conversation as soon as possible face to face, then I would say that's always going to be the best way to play it. Having said that, you want to make sure you have as much information as you possibly can before you have that conversation. So we've talked about not avoiding. But there's also a difference between us not avoiding a conversation and making sure that we have gathered all the information we need and all the facts that we need to have that conversation effectively. You don't want to go in there and just sort of go, oh, I've heard something a bit like this. You know, we want to make sure that we are actually delivering the facts of this situation to somebody else, so that we are armed with everything, so that we can be as clear as possible to the other person. And how do we communicate that to them in the first place? You know, how do we get them into the room with us without them anticipating too much what's about to happen? You know, what do we say in an email to them, or when we invite them in for a meeting? What do we say that's not going to put them into defensive or vulnerable a position before we deliver whatever news we have to deliver to them? So it's about making sure that message in the first place is balanced, so that they are coming in without too much fear before they get into the room.
Sure, because I remember working with somebody many years ago who used to send an email out to somebody to say, I need to book you in for a Brave conversation. Can you come and see me tomorrow at 9? Which is clearly not the right thing to do, because then both parties are walking into that room with an expectation as to something that's going to be difficult, aren't they? Something that's going to be challenging. So you've mentioned some great thoughts around sort of the structure and the thought process. Are there any models out there that people can perhaps go and look at that will help them in terms of structuring their Brave conversation or how they give that feedback to the other person?
Yeah, so we focus a lot on a really fantastic, very simple feedback model, which is AID, or SAID, sometimes it's called. So it's AID or SAID, which is all about how we... The main part of that is that you make sure you explore the impact of somebody's behavior in the first place. So rather than just saying, well, this is what you've done, can you do it like this instead, please? We're saying, well, this is what's happened. And very factually, very evidentially, we say that. So we're not throwing opinion into it. We're really just giving people the facts so that there's... It's not an argument, it's just a statement of facts. And then with that person, you explore the impact of their behavior or whatever has happened, whether it's their work or behavior or something they've said. You explore that impact very fully until you have them on board and really seeing why they might want to change their behavior or modify their behavior in some way. So that's a really great model that we go through in detail with people on our courses. And then... other things that we look at the circle of communication, for example, which really, and we demonstrate that with the use of actors, which is a great way for people to really comprehend what we're talking about there. When we're talking about the majority of the message that we give to people actually comes through our body language and our tone of voice, not our choice of words. And that can be a really hard hitting demonstration for people, because you know, I still do this, I'm sure we all do. It's a common thing for us to go, I've got a difficult conversation to have. Okay, what am I going to say? That's what we think to ourselves. We're like, what am I going to say before I walk into this room? And we try to work out the order of our words, the kind of phraseology, what points we want to cover. We don't think to ourselves, okay, how am I going to sit? You know, what am I going to do with my face? How am I going to use my hands? What am I going to do with the tone of my voice? Where am I going to pitch this vocally? Those are not the things that enter our heads when we have a Brave conversation coming up. But they are the things that really make the difference between that message landing in a way that could instigate a lot of emotion or defensiveness from the other person, and actually them feeling as though we are delivering it with empathy and understanding. So that we look at in a lot of detail. And another one that I put forward as well is the behavior cycle, which is all about how this is a very, you know, it's quite an intuitive model, actually. We all know this, but it's about how we feed off each other in a social situation, in an interpersonal situation. So if we're communicating with each other and one of us has a high emotion in one area, then that's going to affect the behavior of the other person. And then we get into this cycle, and sometimes that can escalate, or sometimes it just keeps going round and round and round and we just can't break it. So we end up in this cycle. So we talk about that a lot, and about how or where we could potentially break that to make sure that we are able to have the effect that we want to have in those situations.
If we may just go back, you mentioned the circle of communication, which I know is a really powerful and an important tool to use. But I know that when you've delivered this training to groups, you know, over the many years that you've been delivering it, you've had people who are autistic, people who are neurodivergent that have come up to you and said, that's all well and good, but actually, when you're focusing on body language and facial expressions, these are things that are very different to me. How do we embed and support that understanding with people? Because you're right in the discussion that, you know, we look at how people are reacting and responding. But if someone's neurodivergent, we might not get some of those same signals.
Yeah, absolutely. So depending on which way we're talking about it, we are always very careful to say that this won't always suit everybody to be able to do this. You know, I'll give you an example. There's We talk about when we pick things up. I'm looking for something now to pick up. I'll find something. What have I got? No, I haven't got anything appropriate. I'm trying to find a pen. There's nothing here. But when we pick things up and we fiddle with them, if we have a, I'm not going to pick that up. If we have a pen or we have a phone or something, you know, sometimes when we're nervous, we'll hold something and we might use that to sort of calm our nerves and we'll sort of be fiddling with something. And ideally, you know, we talk about the fact that we are trying to have a particular impact on the people who are opposite us. So that can be read as us being nervous because we need to fiddle with something, we need to do something with our hands. So sometimes the other, it can make the other person think that we are nervous, or it's a giveaway to how we are feeling because we're doing that. So we talk about that, you know, that that is a thing around body language. That's how it can be read. Having said that, sometimes people need to do that, and that's okay. You know, we have to work within our own comfortableness, comfort. We need to work within our own comfort. If that's something that we have to do in order for us to be able to deliver that message, because it calms us down and we hold a stress ball or something, or we do pick up a pen and we use it, then fine. You know, we just need to be looking at whatever those messages are, how they might be read on the receiving end, and understanding what we are able to do to change that. But it will be different for everybody. So we're very careful to say that. And also on the other side of it, just because somebody is potentially not making eye contact with us, it doesn't mean what we might naturally jump to the conclusion of. You know, we need to be open to the fact that people's body language can be read in different ways. And actually, just because somebody's got their eyes closed and they aren't, it looks like they're not really listening to us, doesn't mean they're not listening to us. You know, be open to the fact that actually it doesn't necessarily mean that.
Yeah, some people's reaction will just be different, won't it? And it's about understanding that and still focus on delivering that message to make sure that what needs to be said is said and it's structured in the right way. What might be some of the reactions that people receive from the other party? So the person that they're having that courageous, brave or difficult conversation with, because sometimes people can be quite aggressive in the reaction, particularly if it's to do with financials. So what might be some of the reactions and how can people respond to those, because they might not be able to prepare for them?
Yeah, and this is it. It can be an emotional conversation for everybody. And of course, we've discussed that. That's why it can feel like such a difficult message to give in the first place. We might anticipate that, or maybe we don't anticipate it. We can't always know what's going on for somebody on the receiving end. And so these things can sometimes come out of the blue. We might not even know that we're about to have a brave conversation until we're in the middle of it. That is when our thoughts around this behavior cycle come in, so to their own, really, because it's likely that if somebody reacts in an aggressive way, then we will be triggered by that. We will feel defensive immediately. And really, this relies then on how we respond in reaction to that. It's very important to say that we don't want to find ourselves in an unsafe situation. So if anybody feels as though they're in an unsafe situation, they should remove themselves as quickly and as calmly as possible. And that is important. Having said that, there are also things that we could potentially do to calm a situation, take it out of that emotion. Sometimes people need to vent in these circumstances, so we need to allow them to do that and then bring them back into a rational place. But it's about us controlling our behavior and how we react to that, that will eventually, usually, calm down what is going on for the other person in the room. Sometimes we need to go around that cycle quite a few times before somebody does calm down and just allow that to happen. And it's difficult, and it's all about regulating our own emotion. You know, this is, and it's something that is therefore a very personal skill to us, learning to recognize our own triggers, learning what is safe, what is unsafe for us, learning what we can handle and what we can't, and also being able to regulate that and finding tools to do that for ourselves, which will be different for everybody to an extent.
And if you had to summarise what the value is to an organisation in investing in this type of training, in training managers, training, you know, leaders to have brave conversations, what would you say to them?
There are always going to be difficult messages that have to be delivered. That's the nature of business. And they can go in numerous ways, these difficult messages. What they can potentially do is make people feel unhappy and not content at work, can demoralize people, can lower their productivity, can just generally really have a very negative effect on the people on the receiving end of it. But if we empower our managers and if we really give them the skills to be able to handle those messages and to get the best out of that and to keep the morale of their teams up as high as possible during those difficult situations, then, I mean, that's invaluable. I think it speaks for itself, really, to be able to keep everybody motivated, to keep everybody in a feeling as though they are valued and respected within the workplace. You know, we know that that has an effect on everybody's productivity and on the positive nature of a team generally.
And final question, if you could give us sort of 2, 3, 4 top tips for anyone that's listening to this podcast thinking, what are the key things I need to think about when I'm preparing for a Brave conversation? What would they be?
I would say one of the things that I think is really important is to think about the person that you're delivering that to, because everybody has a different communication style. And some people will need a more direct approach. Some people might need a more empathic and human approach. So think about that first of all. Structure it, and in particular, think about how you're going to deliver the message itself, you know, that piece of news, whatever it is. Make sure that's clear in your mind, that one piece of news. Other than that, have a really open mind. What you want to do is to engage the other person as much as possible, allow them to tell you their thoughts, and in some ways, allow them to dictate the agenda, listen to them. Make sure that you're asking questions, that they have an opportunity to talk for the majority of the time so that you can hear where they are, and make sure that you are listening, empathizing, and understanding their position, because that is the thing that is going to change ultimately the effect that that news has on them. It's a human situation. So think about it in terms of, this is not just a transaction. It's not just a piece of news. There's a human being at the other end of that. And that's the thing that we want to keep foremost in our minds.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast, talking about the challenges of having brave conversations and giving us some really good top tips as to how people should approach it, and that they should go in being open-minded, not with a fixed agenda. So we really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure as ever to speak to you about one of the areas that you're an expert in. So thank you very much. And we look forward to speaking to you again soon on another TED podcast.
Lovely. Thank you.